Aaron Seitz, The Andrew Jackson Stories is a collection of short stories about the 7th president and the White House gardener. These stories are told from the gardener's perspective. Why did you choose Andrew Jackson as the subject of this book?
I think a lot of non-historians, when we think about the presidents, if we don't know a lot about them, they sort of take on these cartoonish sort of caricatures in our mind. You know, Abraham Lincoln is sort of the tall, noble, fist out and sort of speaking with justice. And Teddy Roosevelt, on the other hand, is sort of the rough and tumble sort of guy who would go around giving people noogies if he had the chance, I think. And Andrew Jackson, to me, has always been sort of a just a stern, you know, grandfatherly, continually grumpy, and yet full of this confidence just to do whatever he wants all the time. And truly, I don't know everything there is to know about Andrew Jackson. I'm not a historian. I imagine that people who are historians pick up this book and will say, Andrew Jackson never did those things.
And then they throw the book across the room
exactly,
and curse your name.
This has nothing to do with Andrew Jackson. But he's just such an interesting fella to have, you know, trouncing into the garden at odd hours that he just makes a great character.
One of the things I did not know about Andrew Jackson, but thanks to you, I do know, or at least thanks to his gardener, I know this, was his apparent interest in dental health. I'd like you to read the story, Andrew Jackson and the Gum Disease Gingivitis, and we'll talk after that.
Okay. I'm worried about the gum disease gingivitis, Andrew Jackson said. We sat in the shadows of the spruce in May's mid-morning warming. Andrew Jackson sat with his legs crossed on an old stump, his bulb of a chin leading his face in a survey of his surroundings. I sat in my chair, and my arms rested like cats. Uh-huh, I said. My mind was on more important things. The garlic had pushed up its spicy green fingers, and when the wind blew, they waved a gentle hello to me. Hello, garlic, I said, waving discreetly so Andrew Jackson wouldn't notice. It's a nice morning, the garlic said. Goddamn inflammation of the gums, Andrew Jackson muttered. He ran his fingers roughly through his hair, which stood up as though called to attention. Well, I said. It's a serious condition, he told me sternly, and it's afflicting a sizable portion of our nation. I fear it may yet afflict me. Don't doubt it, I said. The garlic and onions were getting ready to have a thumb war. 1, 2, 3, 4, they said. Let's have a thumb war. I noticed the onion unfurling a new sprout that, in the next few days, would reach across the row and hook the garlic shoots. But I didn't say anything. I knew the garlic would just complain and grow unevenly. Besides, having the garlic defeated by the onion would give its greens an extra kick. I won't doubt it. I won't at all, Andrew Jackson said, turning to face me. His eyebrows had grown considerably since I had seen him last. They balanced dangerously on his face. I meant I don't doubt it, that it's a problem, gingivitis. That name, gingivitis, like a mad Russian. There's a sergeant in Vermont who had to quit the service because of gingivitis, you know. Didn't even know how he got it. Probably some young tart. Andrew Jackson pulled a lime out of his breast pocket. Me, I'm not taking any chances. He jabbed his thumbnail into the lime and began to peel it. What are you going to do with that lime, I asked. Well, he said, limes cure all manners of mouth diseases. The disease reacts to the lime and releases its hold on the mouth tissues. In fact, the only reason that limes taste sour is because of the reaction they have with the disease in the mouth. If your mouth were completely disease-free, limes would taste sweet as peppermint. Therefore, limes are not only a good indicator of the disease level in your mouth, but sucking on them and spitting frequently will prevent the onset of the dreaded gum disease gingivitis. Good oral hygiene is incredibly important, you see, in my line of work. In one motion, he flicked the last of the peels into the air, and before it landed, he ballooned his mouth with the lime. Andrew Jackson's face went into contortions, his eyebrows jerking and braiding themselves for strength. He stood up from the stump and shook his body. The lime juice ran down his jowls and fell into the earth. There was a look of confused amazement on his face when he finally sat down. How often do you have to do that? I asked. 2 to 3 times a day is best, he said, running his tongue over his teeth. But from what I'm told, the gum disease gingivitis will take advantage of any foothold it can get. Inflame the hell out of your gums, quick as silver. I want my mouth as clean as it can be, so it's limes for me until they start tasting sweet. He got to his feet and straightened out his long woolen coat. New coat? It is indeed. Rachel got it for me last Tuesday. Looks like a girl's coat to me, I said. It had better not be, Andrew Jackson said.
Vanity seems to be a big part of Jackson's character. He's bigger than life. We should note that the gardener is never named in these stories, but his plants know him very well, and they have long conversations with the gardener. In one story, the maple seedling in the strawberry patch, the gardener talks with a little maple who wandered into the strawberries, and it occurred to me, if I were a gardener, weeding and feeding and transplanting for hours at a time, I would talk to the plants. How did working in your own garden influence the stories in this book?
These stories sort of began as a part of the morning meditation, you know, having a cup of coffee and sort of walking out in the backyard and observing the seedlings growing and the peas starting to unfurl their arms and the little, you know, wiry tendrils that they have gripping onto stuff. And sort of the more I watched those, I started seeing those as alive. I mean, I know they're, of course, alive, but more of just of having emotion and that their growth and their birth and their life and then, of course, their death was really interesting to conceive of in human terms. And I know, of course, you know, I don't believe that I'm literally talking to plants, but I think that plants in a garden, they do respond to care. And when we care for another thing, whether it's a human or a pet or a garden, to see it respond in that way does make a connection. When the gardener in the story is talking to his plants, that's definitely, those are conversations that I have quite frequently with garlic and peppers and peas and all sorts of other interesting vegetables.
Many of these stories are accompanied by illustrations by Tana Oshima. Who's the artist and how did you meet her?
Tana Oshima, I've never met. We are bound by this storybook and neither of us have ever really even communicated with each other. It's a cool partnership. These stories were originally published online from a different site, and when Lockjaw Magazine and their editors, Dave Thomas and Christina Collins, got a hold of them and wanted to put them in the book, it was their idea to illustrate them with simple black and white line drawings. And so they contacted Tana Oshima, who is, I've looked at some of her stuff, she's super cool, and sort of gave the manuscript to her and said, what do you think of these? And these are her interpretations without input from me. And I think she did a great job. They're really unique.
Well, Aaron, since you're now an authority on Andrew Jackson, I can't let you go without asking your take on the news that he'll move to the back of the $20 bill and Harriet Tubman will appear in the front. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I mean, I think it's great. I've always been bothered by the $20 bill because from some trick of my eye, and I don't know if I share this with anybody else, I can only see Andrew Jackson's shoulders as being these tiny little baby shoulders. If you look at a $20 bill, and people have tried to explain this to me, they said, no, he's got normal proportioned shoulders. But I tell you, I just can't see it. It's like an optical illusion. And every time I look at this guy, he's got this enormous bobblehead, you know, oversized giant face on these tiny, tiny nubile shoulders, and how does he keep his neck up? I just can't figure it out at all. So I'm happy to see that face removed completely. If not for political reasons, which there are probably many, if nothing else, then it will disturb me quite less.
Okay. Can we expect some more stories from you about other people who grace our U.S. currency?
I don't know. I guess time will tell. Who's your favorite president that I don't know about?
Oh, I guess everybody says Lincoln. I certainly Lincoln. Why not? But George Washington, of course, on the $1 bill. I'm watching the series Turn on Netflix, Washington Spies, and so I've got Washington on the brain lately.
I think he would be a great guy. He'd have false teeth, and he'd be grumpy, but he'd be wise.
I would love to hear a story called George Washington and the dread disease gingivitis.
Oh, he got beaten. That's why he has the false teeth. It got to him.
Aaron Seitz is the author of the Andrew Jackson stories at WNIJ.org. You can hear him read that story about the maple seedling and the strawberries. I'm Dan Klefstad. This is WNIJ.